Welcome back. So last time we got your computer all set up for ProPython development, and we even initialized your first project.
Yeah, laid the groundwork.
Exactly. Now we're going to nail down that daily workflow, like the repeatable recipe you'll use every single time you sit down to code on your Python projects.
This is about building that muscle memory, the core
We're
routine.
talking grabbing the latest updates, firing up the project environment, getting the tools installed, coding, testing, and then saving everything properly.
Precisely. We'll walk through the materials that outline this exact process. The goal is a clear, effective routine you can rely on.
Okay, let's jump in. So before you even think about writing code, what's the absolute first thing?
Right. First thing, always, is to pull the latest changes. You need to update your local project with anything new that's happened on the remote repository, usually GitHub.
Ah, okay. So stuff others might have done, or even changes you made on a different computer.
Exactly. It syncs your local version with the remote one. Super important for avoiding annoying merge conflicts later on.
Makes sense. So how do we do that?
Okay, you'll open your terminal inside VS Code right at the root of your project folder. And the command is git pull origin main.
Git pull origin
That's
main. Got it. Origin is like the main online repo, and main is a branch. Yeah.
usually, yes. That's the standard setup. Now, after you've done that initial pull and set things up, often just git pull by itself will work for future updates on that main branch.
Oh, handy shortcut.
It is. But don't just run the command and forget it. You need to actually look at the output in the terminal.
What am I looking for?
Well, hopefully it just says already up to date, or it might list the files that were updated. The crucial thing is to watch for any messages about conflicts.
Right, conflicts.
Yeah.
That sounds like something we want to avoid.
Definitely. And the best way to avoid them is just making this git pull the very first thing you do every single time. It keeps things smooth, especially when you're collaborating.
Okay, so pull first. Have it established. What's next? We got the latest code.
Now you need to activate your project's specific environment, that isolated space we set up, living in the .venv folder.
Ah, the .venv folder. It's like
Yeah.
switching on the power for this specific project, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. It ensures you're using the correct Python version and all the specific libraries, the dependencies just for this project. It stops things from getting mixed up with other Python stuff on your machine.
Isolation,
Yeah.
key concept. So how do we activate it? Does it differ?
It does, yeah. Depends on your operating system and your terminal. If you're on Windows using PowerShell, you'll type banv dac vnv scripts activate. Make sure you're in your project's main folder when you run that.
VNV script activate. Okay. And for Mac or Linux users?
For Mac or Linux, using shells like vshsh or bash, it's source.vnv bindactivate. Again, run from the project root directory.
Sourced.vnv bindactivate.
Okay. And how do I know it worked?
You'll see a little visual cue. Right at the beginning of your terminal prompt, the name of the environment, usually VMV, will appear in parentheses.
Oh, okay. Like then before the usual prompt. Exactly. That tells you you're now working inside that project's isolated environment.
And this activation. I have to do this every time I open a new terminal for the project.
Yep, every time. But here's a tip. Use the up arrow key in your terminal. It cycles through your previous command, so the activation command will probably be right there after you use it once.
Nice shortcut.
Yeah. And maybe jot down the command in your project's readme.md file too. Just makes it easy to find.
Good idea. Keep it handy. Okay, so pulled the code, activated the .venv. Now what? Do we need tools?
We do. We need to make sure all the external packages, the libraries your project depends on that aren't part of Python's standard install, are actually installed in our .venv.
Right, things like pandas or numpy or other libraries we might need. These are usually listed somewhere.
Correct. They're typically listed in a file called requirements.txt.
Requirements.txt. Okay. And this is different from Python's built-in stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Python comes with a great standard library modules like pathlib for files, squite3 for databases, useS, time. Lots of useful things built right in.
But for everything else.
For everything else, especially specialized things, we install external packages. And requirements.txt tells pip, the package installer, what's needed.
Okay, so how do we install from that file?
Well, first, it's good practice to make sure pip itself and a couple of related tools are up to date. So on Windows and PowerShell, you'd run py-m pip install upgrade pip setup tools wheel.
Pynip install upgrade pip setup tools wheel.
Yeah.
Got it. Upgrading the installer tools first.
And on Mac or Linux, it's very similar. Python 3-emita pip install upgrade pip setup tools wheel.
Okay, tools updated. Now for the actual project libraries.
Now you install everything listed in that requirements.txt file. On windows.pyachemtip and py-r requirements.txt, the ASHA flag means read from file.
Pyachemp install ASHA requirements.txt. Makes sense. And Mick Linux.
Same idea. Python 3-m pip install ASHA requirements.txt. Pip will then go through the file and install each listed package into your active.venv.
Right, so they land inside that isolated environment. Now, this requirements.txt file, does it ever change?
Oh, absolutely. As your project grows, you'll find you need new libraries. You'll add the name of the new package to your requirements.txt file.
And then I just run that pip install -r requirements.txt command again.
Exactly. That'll install the new additions. It's a living document, really, that reflects your project's dependencies over time.
Okay, that makes sense. It evolves with the project. Right, so dot pull, activate, install. Are we ready to actually dot code now?
We are. This is the core part, right? Writing and running your Python code. This might be in Python script files, those ending in .py, or maybe Jupyter Notebooks, the .ipynb files.
Let's start with the .py scripts. What's the process there?
Okay, first, crucial step inside VS Code. You need to tell it to use the Python interpreter from your .venv folder, because that's where all the stuff you just installed lives.
How do I tell VS Code that?
You use the command palette. That's CTRL plus Shift plus P on Windows Linux, or CMD plus Shift plus P on Mac. Then start typing Python, select interpreter.
Python, select interpreter.
Yeah. And you'll see a list. You need to choose the one that points to the Python executable inside your project's .venv folder. Usually shows the path clearly.
And once I select it,
VS Code will then use that specific Python environment for things like running your code, linting, debugging, everything for that workspace. You'll often see the selected environment down in the status bar, bottom left.
Got it. So interpreter selected, .venv, activated in the terminal. Now I can run my script.
Now you can run it. From that activated terminal, you'd type something like py myfile.py on Windows.
Replacing myfile.py with my actual script name, of course.
Of course. Or on Mac Linux, it'd be python3demoscript.py. Again, using your real file name.
And before running, .save.
Yes, save often. Use autosave in VS Code if you like it, or just hit CLL plus S or CMD plus S habitually. And really make sure the script actually runs without errors before you think about committing it.
Right. Test it works. What about Jupyter Notebooks, the .ipnb files?
Okay, for notebooks, first you'll probably need the Jupyter extension for VS Code if you don't have it already. You can grab that from the extensions view, CTRL plus Shift plus X or CMD plus Shift plus X. Just search for Jupyter.
Install the Jupyter extension. Check. Then what?
When you open a notebook file, VS Code needs to know which Python environment or kernel to use to execute the code cells. It should ideally prompt you to select one.
And I should choose.
You should choose the kernel that corresponds to your project's .venv, the one you activated and installed packages into.
Makes sense. What if it doesn't prompt me?
You can select it manually, look for a Select Kernel button, usually in the top right of the notebook editor, or you can use the command palette again, Python. Select interpreter often works for notebooks too. Just make sure you pick the .venv one.
Okay, select the .venv kernel. And running code is just cell by cell.
Yep. Click in a cell, press Shift plus Enter to run it and move to the next cell, or ETRL plus Enter to run it and stay put. And again, save your notebook.
Sometimes notebooks don't seem to find the packages even if they're installed in the .venv.
Yeah, that can occasionally happen. Sometimes restarting the kernel helps. There's usually a restart kernel button or menu option.
Okay.
Another thing people sometimes do is create a special folder named .vscode in their project root with a settings.json file inside to explicitly tell VS Code about the Python path. We won't dig into the specifics of that file now, but it's a potential fix.
Good to know there are options. And a key thing with notebooks.
Always, always run the entire notebook from top to bottom before you commit your changes. Make sure it runs cleanly all the way through.
Right. Ensures the saved version reflects the actual working code.
Okay. So just to recap the environment, keep the project folder open in VS Code. Run terminal commands from the project root.
Exactly. That context is important. And save your work. Can't say that enough. And testing.
Yeah.
Absolutely crucial, right? Don't commit broken code.
Please don't. Use the debugger in VS Code. Use simple print statements if you need to, whatever it takes to find and fix errors. If you're stuck on a tricky part, sometimes it's better to comment out that section temporarily.
Just to get a version that actually runs before you commit.
Exactly. Better to commit something that works, even if a feature is temporarily disabled, than something that crashes.
Solid advice. Okay, so let's say I've coded, I've saved, I've tested, and miracle of miracles, it all works. Now I need to save this progress officially using Git and push it to GitHub.
Right. The grand finale of the workflow loop. This involves three main Git commands in sequence.
Lay them on me. Command number one.
Git add add add. That period is important. It tells Git to stage all the changes you've made, new files, modified files in your project directory. It's like putting everything you want to save into a box, ready for the next step.
Stage the changes with Git added. Got it. What's step two?
Git commit M, your descriptive commit message. This takes everything you just staged and creates a permanent snapshot in your project's history. The FM flag lets you add a message explaining what you did in this commit.
And that message should be descriptive.
Yes. Replace your descriptive commit message with something short but meaningful about the changes, like add user login feature or fix calculation bug in report. Enclose it in double quotes. Good messages are incredibly helpful later.
Like a logbook for the project.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So git add git commit error message. What's the final step?
Git push you origin main. This uploads your local commits, the snapshots you just made, up to the remote repository on GitHub, specifically to the main branch on origin.
Git push you origin main.
Yep.
And that origin main part. Do I need that every time?
You usually only need the full you origin main the very first time you push a new branch. It sets up the tracking relationship. After that, for subsequent pushes on the same branch, just git push often works fine.
Okay, so git push for most updates after the first one. And the key idea here is to do this add commit push cycle.
What? Yes, commit frequently. Every time you finish a logical chunk of work or fix a specific bug or add a small feature, don't wait until you've changed hundreds of lines. Small, frequent commits with good messages make the project history much easier to understand and manage.
Got it. Small steps. Clear messages. So that's the whole loop then. Let's recap the workflow.
Okay. Start with git pull to get the latest code.
Then activate the environment.
Yeah.
Spreaded scripts activate on Windows or source.nvbind activate on Mclinux. Check to the vim prompt.
Right. Then make sure dependencies are installed. Update pip with pip install. Upgrade pip setup tools wheel. Then install project needs with pip install up our requirements.txt.
Select the .venv interpreter in VS Code, then edit and run your code, whether it's .ps scripts or .ipnb notebooks.
Test thoroughly. Make sure it works. Debug if needed.
Save frequently. Then stage changes with git add, commit them with git, commit an M clear message, and finally upload with git push.
That's a cycle. Pull, activate, install, code, test, commit, push.
By doing this consistently, you're making sure you're up to date, working in the right environment, have the tools you need, and your work is saved and shared properly.
Exactly. It becomes your professional rhythm.
It might feel like a lot of steps at first. I get that. But honestly, practice this a few times and it'll become second nature. Just the standard way you start and end your coding sessions.
Absolutely. We really hope this deep dive has helped clarify this essential workflow. Are there any parts of this that still feel unclear? Any challenges you've run into trying to set up your own process?
Yeah. Definitely experiment with these commands, get comfortable with them. This kind of consistent process really is a cornerstone of professional development. It just makes everything smoother, especially collaboration,
yeah,
and leads to more solid projects in the long run.